Hi everyone, good afternoon, good morning, good night, depends where you are in the world. This is Shai Danon from Raising the Frequency from Israel. And today I'm with Dr. Miriam Grossman. And yes, I'm quite excited. The subject is not easy maybe, but it's necessary to speak about it, especially nowadays. And I hope and I'm sure actually that Miriam will share some of her knowledge, which you may find fascinating. Let's start, shall we? Hello, hello. Hi, Miriam. How are you doing?
Great. Hi, Shai. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. It's my pleasure. And thanks for agreeing to be here. I think it's necessary to cooperate and share some of this valuable knowledge that you bring. And hopefully you can shed some light on the subject. I just tell the audience, before you introduce yourself, I just tell the audience that I watched the film of Matt Walsh, What is a Woman, which I highly recommend the audience to watch it. I think it's really, again, it's really important to watch this movie nowadays. And I came across a few segments of you speaking there. And one of my followers, he said, Shai, I think you should speak with Miriam. And I agreed. And that's how the connection was made. And here we are today. So before we jump into the subject, I think it will be great if you can share with us, who are you, Miriam Grossman, and what is your, I would say, expertise or credentials, and then we just dive in into the conversation. Is that all right?
Okay, sure. First of all, thank you, Shai, so much for having me.
Sure.
This is the first time that I've been able to speak to an Israeli audience, and I'm very, very happy to be able to do that. In fact, on the day that the documentary by Matt Walsh came out, I was actually arriving in Israel, and I was there for a little bit and then returned to the U.S. So in terms of my background, my expertise, I am a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist, medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I have been practicing for almost 40 years, have a lot of experience with a lot of different kinds of people, children, families, and different situations. Right now, my practice consists of helping gender-confused children and young adults and their parents. So that is my focus right now. I'm also doing a lot of writing and speaking on this issue because I do not follow the prevailing recommendation, which is to affirm, meaning the prevailing recommendation of some of the professional groups in my country, the recommendation that's coming out of Washington, D.C., and obviously that's coming from a lot of activist organizations, which is to affirm, to without question go with the child's feeling and identity of who they believe they are, no matter what their age, no matter what their mental health status might be, and so on. So I am being instructed by my professional organizations and by my government health organizations to, let's say if a child comes to me who's 8 or 9 or 10 years old, and 2 weeks ago she decided that her identity is that of a boy, and she wants to be called a boy's name. So according to that narrative, I am not supposed to question or deeply explore what's going on. Mm-hmm. I am supposed to use her new name, use her the pronouns that she wants me to use, and so on and so forth. So my message right now to you in Israel is basically I don't believe you're anywhere near the level of epidemic that we are here in the United States and Canada, in some of the other Western countries regarding transgenderism. I think that I may be wrong, but I think that the numbers are, you know, it's much more unusual.
To be honest, we're not quite there yet, but we're definitely heading there. I mean, there's a massive propaganda regarding this whole LGBT and whatever other letters they may add subject. And also with transgenderism, you know, in kindergarten, et cetera. I mean, we see similar stories in the States, in the UK, and obviously other countries as well, mostly Western countries. We see them also in Israel. It's not as severe, I should say, as in the US, but it's definitely, they definitely put up the flames, if you know what I mean.
Correct. So I recently was made aware of that the book about jazz, Anid Jazz,
yes,
that it was translated and it's, yes, now available in Israel. Yes. And I was made aware by a woman that I work with in Israel, whose name is Alex Aharon. And she has done a lot of work in this area. Alex Aharon, she Excellent. Has a website called Gender Mapper, and in which she has cataloged, she has a map of the world, and she has cataloged with great detail the number of clinics that are providing transgender care to children and to adults. So I was made aware through Alex, actually told me, that the famous Tzipi, you have a woman there who's a famous children's entertainer.
Tzipi Shavit, yeah, she is the one with the book, with the I'm yeah. Jazz book, yes. Yeah.
So I did watch Tzipi's little video in which she was so enthusiastic about the book and saying that she read it to her little grandchildren. And this really, really disturbs me. And so let's talk about that for a minute.
All right.
So the story of jazz, jazz is the poster child for a transgender child, really all over the world, I believe. I mean, so jazz is a child who's now about 21 years old. And what jazz is a boy who lives as a girl. So just saying it that way is, of course, considered very controversial, because I am supposed to, as a medical doctor, I am supposed to be talking about jazz as a woman. But let's put that aside. I'll use female pronouns just for the convenience of it. Not because, yes, I consider this person to be female, but let's leave it at that. All right, so Jazz was a boy who insisted from a very early age that he was a girl. Jazz was raised as a girl. His parents took him to specialists when he was a child, and they were instructed to raise him as a girl. So, and he was raised as a girl. He was given at a young age, I believe at age 11, but I may be wrong. It may have been earlier mm-hmm. than that. He mm-hmm. was given puberty blockers. She was given puberty blockers.
Yeah.
Puberty blockers are medications that are used for various medical conditions. They are not approved to be used for transgender children, but they are very widely being used for transgender children. And the justification for that, we're being told, is that as these children move into puberty, they're in a lot of distress mm-hmm. about their body changing. So, for example,
which is quite normal, just to say, it's quite normal.
Of course. But there is an added, to be accurate here, there is an added level of anxiety for a child who believes that they were born in the wrong body mm-hmm. To have their body developing in a way that they, in their own minds, think is incorrect. And their parents and doctors and therapists and people around them are agreeing with that. So, for example, in Jazz's case, it seems that everyone around her was in agreement that she was born in the wrong body and that she, as it says in the book, well, in the English version of the book, she writes, I was born with a girl's brain and a boy's body. In the Hebrew version of the book, they changed the word brain to nefesh, which
wow.
is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So they say that I have the, does she say nefesh or neshama? I'm not sure.
Wow. This is deeper. Yeah.
Of a girl. But I have the goof, the body of a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can understand if a child is going through years of believing that and believing that that indeed can happen, which of course, biologically, it cannot. The brain, if you have a normal, chromosomes and genitalia, then that means that you have the brain that corresponds to the chromosomes. So let's say you're like Jazz, you're growing up as a child with everyone around you saying, yes, it's possible that you were born in the wrong body. And then as you get closer to puberty, and you have this idea that your body is going to change in the wrong direction, so to speak, of course, it's going to cause tremendous distress, tremendous anxiety.
Yeah.
Okay. So the solution that some doctors, originally it came from doctors in Holland, and it's called the Dutch protocol. The idea there was to put puberty on pause, so to speak. Not that that's altogether possible, but these medications, puberty blockers, interfere with the working of the brain and prevent the hormones, the natural hormones of puberty to do what they're meant to do. So like I said, puberty blockers are medications that have been approved for medical conditions such as prostate cancer and endometriosis and precocious puberty. That's a medical diagnosis. That's a biological problem. Okay. So in this case, though, we are using puberty blockers off-label for a condition that is essentially an emotional condition. Mm. It's not a physical condition.
Mm-hmm.
The kids with gender dysphoria have no abnormal medical condition. Their blood work is normal. Their bodies are normal. Their chromosomes are normal. Everything is normal. in those other conditions in which the blockers are used, we have pathology. Okay, so these blockers are being used in children, and I believe that in Israel, they're being given at Ichilov Hospital, I believe, has a clinic there, and these blockers are being given to kids. Now, parents are being led to believe that blockers are completely reversible and that what they basically do is just give the child and the family a few years to sort to figure everything out. But I want to point out a few things here that parents are not told. Number one, we do not know, number one, that almost all the children that are being put on these blockers continue on to cross-sex hormones. In other words, almost like 98% of kids that are going on blockers to delay their puberty then decide to go on, if it's a girl, she goes on testosterone. If it's a boy, he goes on estrogen. And they go through a chemically simulated puberty of the opposite sex. Are you following me?
I am actually, yes. Unfortunately, yes, I am.
Okay. So what I want to point out over here is, number one, because so many of these kids continue on the path toward, toward transitioning to the opposite sex, we don't have the data to see whether it's really correct to say that the blockers are completely reversible. We would need to have a large population of kids that after a year or two or three on blockers, they would say, you know what, I'm not going to do this. I'm actually going to go back and live according to what my biology is. And then we would be able to determine, you know, we'd look at what happens with the puberty, and we'd be able maybe to see if is this puberty similar to the natural puberty that would have happened a few years ago. So that's number one. We don't have that information because we simply don't have enough kids. And I believe the reason we don't have enough of these kids is because when you've been living for a few years believing that you can be born in the wrong body and that you truly are the opposite sex and that this is the path to take to alleviate your emotional distress, and everyone around you is calling you by, you know, the name that you've picked, the pronouns that you've picked, you're dressing as the opposite sex, you're presenting yourself as the opposite sex, it is really hard to make a U-turn. It's very hard. I can't hear you.
Sorry. Oh. And obviously it's difficult to make a U-turn. And obviously after you've taken these chemicals, it's even harder to make a U-turn, if I get you right. Yes.
Well, it's harder. Well, I'm looking at it. You can stop the blockers whenever you want, but I'm saying that if you look at, you have to consider the child and the family, in terms of, you know, the stress that this places on their lives, how the rest of the world is looking at them, the school, the relatives, the neighbors, the therapist, everybody now has been told to affirm this child as the opposite sex. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're going to have to come out and announce, wait a minute, this isn't right for us. This isn't what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And the pushback from the transgender community is very powerful. It's very negative.
Yeah. And I want to get to that just a bit later, to this community pushback or the agenda that is being shoved down our throat. But let's wait with that. I want still to talk about the children and their parents.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I wanted to say one more thing about the blockers.
Please. Please, please.
Okay,
sorry.
Because we're really being led to believe, and you saw in the documentary how all these people were saying reversible, reversible, reversible. We do not know that that is correct. And in any case, even if it is reversible, it is not reversible that you have lost, that the child has lost a few years of their life as all their friends and their peers have gone through puberty with all the changes that that means. Yeah. Puberty is a massive emotional, physical process of change. And in the meantime, while your friends are all going through those changes, that child who's on blockers remains a child.
A child, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And all, you know, puberty is much more than just developing breasts and, you know, other changes related to the reproductive system. Puberty has massive effects on the brain.
Yeah.
And on thinking and emotion and all sorts of cognitive capacities. And we have no idea if, number one, the kids that don't go through puberty at the correct time are going to go through the same kind of puberty later on. This is so, look, it's an experiment. It's an experiment. It's a dangerous experiment.
I want to tell the audience that it's quite important, because what we see in recent weeks, I mean, during this parade month or whatever, or pride month or whatever name they give it, is a lot of propaganda and a lot of agenda around us. Now, it's not that common, unfortunately, but still, it's not that common to hear someone like yourself saying what you are saying. So for me, and obviously this goes hand in hand with my morality, with my sanity, with my common sense. And it goes hand in hand with a lot of people I know, common sense and morality, etc. So me, by bringing you here to speak and to say what you're saying, it's really important, because not many people say what you are saying. So there's even an extra importance to your words and to what you are telling us. Now, saying it's irreversible, or let's say even if it is to an extent, even if it is, the suffering from what I get from the video, from the film, and from what I've kind of explored a bit, the suffering is tremendous. To a child which at first he plays a game, or she plays a game with herself. I want to be, you know, my son, he put some, how you say, nail varnish, polish, how you say. This is common thing to do. I mean, for boys and girls to play and to dress with this and to dress with that. But once they are fixed on that because of some confirmation from society, I think this is, it's like taking an advantage of a natural process that almost or every child, boys and girls, they go through. And, you know, playing with the other toys, playing with other clothes, playing with some like all this stuff that girls have and rings and etc. This is quite normal thing to do in order to find out, maybe again, it's just a game, but to find out that you are a boy or that you are a girl, and you are naturally so. But once there's society around you enforcing and encouraging you to play this role and to go on with it, go along with it, and you take this role on you, it's like a imagination play role, you go into this play role and it becomes a reality. And within a few months or few years, let's say you go on this role and you take these chemicals, then it's really, really hard to make a U-turn. My question is, two questions. One is, what's the youngest age that you come across in this process? And the second, which is, it's related, parents, let's say, if you give me an example of a 6-year-old or 3-year-old, whatever, where are the parents in this? I mean, are the parents that you meet, are they sane? I mean, how they relate to that? Don't they see that there's something weird about that?
Shai, this is a very dangerous, destructive ideology. We have a psychic epidemic of young people who are sucked into this belief system through the internet, through their friends. And it can happen very fast that vulnerable children, vulnerable, that's an important word, children, latch on to this specific symptom as a way to express their distress. So vulnerable children, meaning children who already have some sort of anxiety, depression, trouble making friends, kids who are on the autistic spectrum. These are the kids that are most likely to be attracted to this for various reasons, which we can go into. But I don't want to ignore your question. You asked me, what is the youngest child? Yes. Well, you see, it's important to understand that gender dysphoria, meaning this is the term that we're using now for the discomfort with one's biological sex. There's different groups with different demographics that exist with this symptom. We've always had, we've known in psychiatry for a very long time that there's a group of rare, you know, children who at 3, 4, 5, 6 years of age begin to say that, insist that either they want to be the opposite sex or that they are the opposite sex. This used to be called gender identity disorder. Like I said, it was very rare. I learned about it when I was doing my training, my medical training, but it was something that, you know, we never expected to see any. It was something like in the books, like you don't expect to see anything. Yeah. Like you don't. Okay. And that was one group, those really young kids. And Jazz would have fit into that demographic. Mm-hmm. Those kids are mostly boys. For every one girl that fits into that category of childhood onset or prepubescent onset, there's 6 boys. So it's a lot more boys. Then there's another group of adults who have gender dysphoria. And these are mostly men in their 30s and 40s. And they go toward transitioning. That's a totally different group. What you and I are speaking about today is a new population of kids with gender dysphoria that we have never seen before. And that is kids who are adolescents, either early or later adolescents, who never had any discomfort with being a boy or a girl. In fact, their parents often describe them as being a stereotypical girl or boy. And then there's suddenly over months or even weeks, there's this a change in them. The lockdowns, COVID played a big part in this because so many kids were at home on the internet, not socializing and being exposed on the internet to all sorts of influences about transgenderism. So when you ask about the youngest kid, I would have to answer that it would be those really young kids in that first group that I mentioned.
Like 3-year-old?
There are kids of that age that do, you know, do insist on, they see themselves, you know, I mean, 3 is young, but But at the age of three, if a child is speaking clearly, the child might already be insisting that they're the opposite sex and say, no, I'm a boy. I haven't seen kids like that in my office. Like I said, they're very rare. Yeah. I'm seeing the kids that I spoke about in the category of the psychic epidemic that's going on right now. That's who I'm seeing. Now, you asked about the parents.
Hang on. No. Before we go to the parents, sorry, Miriam. By the way, my mom's name is Miriam, just to say, so I feel kind of even more friendship with you. Before we go to the parents and to the agenda in general, there's this material, I think it's called Tartazine, I'm not sure, that is, but maybe I'm wrong with the name, but it's like this sort of chemical that they put in food, and this helps to change the sex of a child. Now, they've done the experiments with frogs, all right? And you know what I mean? I forget some of the details, but it's a flavoring or a coloring that they put in food, like an additive or something, that supports sex change in frogs. So they put it into sweets and into this sort of snacks that kids eat because they have parents who give them this junk food. And this may support Tarazine. Do you know this material? Tarazine. No. Okay. So while, one second. I asked from a guy who just gave me the name. Please find me the short video of Tarazine. Okay. Tartarzine or Tarazine. A short video that speaks about that. And while my audience, my friend will find this short video, because I want you to see it. I mean, I'm quite pleased if I can bring up something new for you. Please go and answer about the parents, because the parents, especially in this such a young age for a boy or girl, they play a big role. I mean, whatever the parents will take, the path that they will take, obviously it's to support their boy or girl, but the boy or girl will be reinforced by the parents' push or the parents' support. So it's quite important to understand the psychology of the parents in regard of their boy or girl, not tendency, but emotional distress, maybe being expressed by wanting to be a boy or a girl. Here, I have the video. gay frogs. One second. Give me a second. It's a short film. It's 1 minute. No, sorry, it's 3.5 minutes. It's really important, especially because you don't know it. And I'm like, yeah.
I like the CSI.
Okay. Wait. 1 second. I think you find it fascinating. 1 second. There it is. Right.
I also like frogs, and so I also feel a real drive to help understand how pesticides and other chemicals are affecting amphibian populations.
Hayes and his students have been looking for clues in the Salinas Valley.
50% of the U.S.'s agricultural products come out of California. Something like 85% of the country's lettuce comes out of Salinas, 90% of the almonds. It's called the Salad Bowl of America. California uses more pesticides than any other state. The second biggest is Florida. Things like chlorpicrin is used out here on the strawberries. Chlorpicrin is a nerve gas. These are guys who are applying it. They're out there picking it. Methyl bromide is a fumigant, something you pump into the soil. What are some of the other big ones, you guys? Somatrazine. This will all end up in the river that we're working in here. It might look like we're out in a bush somewhere, but 15 feet on either side, we're surrounded by agriculture, and the runoff ends up in this river. All of the algae is a result of all the nutrients, because a lot of fertilizers are used in agriculture. And once those fertilizers get into the water, you get these blooms of algae. I wouldn't say it's a sign of a healthy river. This is a site where we typically find compromised immune systems, tadpoles that aren't able to fight off disease. our data so far suggests that the mixture of pesticides causes an increase in stress hormones, and those stress hormones cause immunosuppression, which leads to the inability to respond to any kind of disease pathogen.
Hayes is testing the effects of chemicals like atrazine, a common herbicide.
We have a whole family of animals where we've eliminated the female chromosome.
Specimen 01.
These animals that we know are genetic males have been exposed to atrazine for their entire life. And many of these genetic males now are turning into females. You can see he's got eggs that kind of look like they're in a sack. These are actually yolked eggs ready to be laid. What's happening is you're skewing sex ratios. You can get genetic bottlenecking, which can cause crashes. And quite frankly, if you're a genetic male, it'd be nice if you developed as a genetic male. And now we have a chemical very common in the environment that's effectively sex reversing animals.
I want to show you something pretty amazing, scientifically speaking. The one that's sort of remarkable is this pair. These are both males. The one on the bottom acting as the female, we affectionately refer to as Darnell. He's a genetic male that not only acts like a female, he lays eggs like a female. He, she has been exposed to atrazine all of his life. I don't even really know how to reference it. This is Darnell's third clutch. So Darnell has sons and daughters that we've grown up. You can see eggs in the bottom. This is actually her second clutch for today. He, she has been copulating for getting close to 24 hours now. This is probably one of the most remarkable things I've seen in my work. But I personally have mixed emotions. I'm very excited about the science and trying to understand the mechanism. But on the other hand, I am worried. This is the most common contaminant in ground and surface water and drinking water. And the level of atrazine that it took to make this male turn into a female is 3 times less than what's allowed in our drinking water.
Yes. So have you noticed he specifically said about turning male frogs into females? And you mentioned that it's 1 to 6. I mean, mostly you see boys who would go and would choose, I don't know which words even to use, but but sorry for my poor vocabulary as well. But basically, it correlates with what you said, that mostly you see boys. It's 1 girl to 6 boys that may want to change or reverse their sex or whatever. And he spoke about that mostly it's male frogs who will change, by given this substance, will change their sex into female frogs. So it's quite interesting, this correlation. Have you not heard about this substance?
Not specifically. I certainly heard that, you know, there are toxic chemicals that are being used in our food and in products that we have around us that are potentially very harmful. But this particular one, no.
All right. So there's a few of them, and also obviously also mercury and aluminium. They also disrupt the hormonal systems. And it's been, you know, a few decades since like widespread use of this mercury and aluminium and various other substances and some of these chemicals like we see in this film. I think, by the way, this doctor, this guy who spoke in this video, I think he was fired after he discovered that, just to add something else to the mix. So this is just one substance that may push the change, the physical change of the organs or even in the brain, all right? I mean, the whole system, the hormonal system may be affected from something like that. It may be herbicides, it may be in the coloring of the food or preservatives, etc. But I think it's something to look at, especially after you've seen this. I think it's something to look at when you have time. Thanks for letting me show it to you and obviously the audience. If you don't mind to go back to the parents, because I think it's a major part in this process, how much the parents are influenced by agenda and how they, if they, and how they support their boy or girl in this process.
Okay, well, you know, I want to underscore that this is usually a complicated situation with the child, with the family. It's not just a simple, you know, it's not a broken bone. You fall down, you break your bone, you get a cast, you wear it, it's over, you're fine. This is not what we're looking at here. Now, parents, I would say, at least the parents that come to me, are very devoted, loving, responsible parents.
Yes.
And most of them have already, or many of them have already turned to gender therapists who are affirming and following the narrative, the accepted narrative, and they have discovered that those gender therapists are not in the best interest, are not working in the best interest of the child and the family. Mm. In general, parents are going to listen to the experts. I mean, you know, unless a parent is in the medical or mental, even look, I have parents who are doctors, parents who are psychologists, you know, who come to me because they feel they don't have the expertise, they don't understand it, they don't know how to deal with it. They're very pulled in different directions because when you look up online, again, what the prevailing narrative is and what all the big organizations are saying and what the president of the United States is saying, they're supposed to go in the direction of putting the child on the path toward transitioning. So, you know, parents are going to try and figure out what's the best thing for their child. Now, are there other kinds of parents who have their own emotional, you know, problems, and they may be getting some secondary gain out of having a child who's transgender? Of course there are parents like that. Mm-hmm. When you have a transgender child, you know, there's something very special about it. There's something very, you know, progressive and, you know, look at me, we're so accepting, we're so progressive, we're so open-minded. We will love our child, you know, no matter what direction it takes us in. Of course, the other parents love their child as well.
Sure.
You know, they just feel that this is not a healthy direction to move in. So are there parents who will either consciously or subconsciously kind of take advantage and promote or push their child into a transgender identity? Yes, there probably are. I don't see those kind of, those parents don't come to me. They don't end up in my office.
Yeah. I know it's tricky for you to speak about it. I'm aware of that. And also it's a live broadcast, so I'm aware of that as well. Nevertheless, I think it's highly important to speak about the agenda, the propaganda, the who is pushing it, why they are pushing it. If you can answer, again, with your limitations of answering these kind of questions, I totally understand. Again, you are a voice in the wilderness here. I mean, I totally understand, and I'll take everything you say as is. Yeah, but I think it's really important to speak about the agenda. I know it's not your major field. It's treating the children and the parents. It's your major field. But obviously, being in this field for decades, knowing what you're knowing, please share with us.
Okay, sure. I'll first say that I'm not completely alone at all. And there are more and more people are speaking up.
Great to know.
I was one of the earliest because I started talking about this over 10 years ago, but there have always been psychiatrists and other medical doctors that have spoken up against this. And especially now, it is becoming, it's still very hard, and there's a lot of people that are scared to do so. But I'm not just alone in the wilderness.
Excellent. It's good to know. It's good to know. It gives some hope for humanity.
And also, just to be accurate, I haven't been doing this particular work with gender for, you know, for decades and decades. It's more so recently that I'm doing it. I became interested in this subject because I used to work at UCLA, a large university, and I worked with students. I was a psychiatrist for students, and I noticed over the years that I was there that many of them were making unhealthy decisions regarding their sexual activity. And so I started looking into what kids are taught about sexuality and sexual activity. And that's where I first noticed that there's an agenda and that sex education is not about health. It's about freedom. Sex education is about exploring, experimenting, trying different behaviors. It's not about health. If it was about health, if it was about staying free of infection and free of disease, then we would have a totally different kind of sex education. Sure. And we would have one, for example, that would tell kids that girls are more vulnerable than boys when it comes to sexual behavior and having many partners and so on. And girls are not told that. And girls are not told that they're going to pay a higher price for having multiple partners at a young age. Yeah. And girls are not told that, for example, an abortion is not just like having, you know, your teeth pulled. It can be a very deeply, for men and for women, a very deeply emotional, scarring experience that stays with you for your entire life.
Especially if it's in a younger age. I mean, even with adults. I mean, with adult women. So, obviously, with younger age females. Yes, women.
So I just and I wrote a book. I wrote two books actually on this subject, on sex education and on mental health. How my profession was hijacked. My profession has been captured. By radical agendas. So you asked the question, wait a minute, I went off on a tangent.
Who is pushing the agenda and why they're pushing the agenda?
Okay, so, you know, that's a big discussion and I'd love to come back sometime, but, you know, to just say briefly, there are people who want to change society. to put it mildly, there's people that want to create they have a vision for a different kind of a world. Some of those things may be good. And it's good to have a vision for a different kind of a world sometimes. But we have to look closely at what that vision is. In terms of sex education, the vision is a world where there's no restraints. There's just no Judeo-Christian values. Kind of free for all, no restrictions. Just if you have two consenting people, it doesn't even matter what age they are, then just go for it. So many people had and still have this vision for sexuality. The thing is that, you know, if you look at the science and you look at the medicine, it's not going to work, because people who go in that direction of many, many partners and experimenting and so on and so forth, they do pay a certain price, both emotionally and physically. That's just the way it is. That's the way that we're made. You know, there's a whole list of sexually transmitted infections, HIV, abortion. It's a long list of things that occur, and that people will end up, you pay a price. Let me just put it that way. You're going to pay a price. So that's not explained to kids at all. Now, the other thing with gender is even deeper than that. Gender is undermining a child's basic sense of identity as male or female. The gender ideology is basically, it goes to the core of our humanity. Because male and female is a core element of being human. And what's being done here quite successfully is that male and female are being made, at least in the minds of people that are buying this, irrelevant. Okay, mm-hmm. Like erased as an important aspect of a person. So mm-hmm. I have patients, for example, 14, 15-year-old patients who, if there's, let's say they're talking about a friend of theirs, and I'll say, is that a girl or a boy you're talking about? So the patient will take offense that I think that's important.
Right. Right.
That piece of information, which, by the way, Shai, we are made, you know, whether you believe that we evolved, you know, according to Darwin, or if you believe.
No
we
way. Were, no way.
Or if you believe we were, you know, created by God, which is what I believe.
But, me too. Same here.
So, but regardless of what you believe, we are made in such a way that within a fraction of a second, we want to determine whether the person that we're talking to is male or female.
Hmm.
And when we're not able to do that, it causes a kind of disorientation.
Yes.
And I believe that this disorientation is part of the agenda.
Obviously, you speak in a very understated way, but I accept it. I have another tricky question, if you don't mind. Have you noticed, maybe, sorry for laughing, it's a tricky question. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
By the way, if you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't be here with me in this talk if you wouldn't believe in God, all right? If you would be on the other side of belief system, most likely I wouldn't speak with you on that matter. I would find someone else. But as I see from the Matt Walsh, What is a Woman film, immediately I noticed where you're coming from. That's why I agreed to speak with you when Alon suggested, you know, conduct an interview with you. So kind of, yeah, let's do it, because she's on the right side. Anyway, my question is, and so sorry for asking it, have you noticed that adults that may be involved with sex change or maybe involved with therapeutic ways of this field, that they may have or they may be involved with pedophile activities? Good question, right? Sorry.
I really have to think of how I want to answer that. My mind my mind is going immediately to the very known fact that people like Alfred Kinsey and John Money, these are people that I talk about on my website and in my books. They're important people to know about, even though they lived, you know, they're long gone, and they did their work in the 50s and 60s, 70s, that they were both pedophiles.
Yeah.
And not only were they pedophiles in a private way, but they, especially John Money, both of them actually publicly felt that pedophilia was not necessarily a problem. They said it, I don't know if Kinsey said it publicly, but for sure, John Money came out and said publicly that even incest under certain circumstances may be a positive experience for a child. So John Money is the source of the gender theory, which is in which he proposed that male and female is completely separate from biology. But that's a whole other big discussion. Now, I would say like this, that part of what we're seeing happen here in sex education, in the transgender ideology, is a breakdown of boundaries, a breakdown of rules and laws of society, of
norms.
I
just said norms, like norms. Social norms. Yes.
Norms. So it's really about breaking all of this down, deconstructing all of this. And so I think that it makes sense that if we are deconstructing the norms of society that we have had for thousands of years, then that's going to be one of them.
Yeah, but this is kind of, not to say about you, but just this phrasing is kind of justifying what they do. But I want to know is whether you notice that people who are involved in the industry, whether, again, therapists or in the therapeutic field that are involved with this transgender or gender fluidity, as it's called as well, or parents or other adults who somehow involved with that, do you know, have you noticed, if whether it's statistically or whether it's your surroundings, you know, in the close surroundings, or whether from colleagues that you work with and speak about that subject freely, obviously, do you speak about that, the fact that, or the assumption that maybe some of these people are pedophiles?
Well, honestly, I don't have that many colleagues that I speak to about this subject, the subject of, you know, of this hour that we've been talking about. There are some, but not many. I'm gonna pass. I'm not passing on this question because I have any fear or anything like that of answering it. Right. I just feel that my experience has not taken me in that direction. Right. Certainly none of the parents that I work with. No.
Not the parents, not the parents necessarily, because the parents, they may be just genuinely surprised as well from what is going on. I'm talking about, again, like other people, whether therapists, whether people working in this field. Yes, all right. But I take your answer as is. And obviously, the first answer you gave about what's his name, Manning, is actually sufficient. I mean, the guy who started this all, at least 60 years ago or so, this whole area of transgenderism or gender fluidity was a known pedophile, introvertly and extrovertly. So it's a good answer. It's a bad subject, but it's a good answer for that question. So yeah, obviously, thank you for that. Have you noticed, just one last, it's not a question, I just want to share some bits and bobs with you. Last week I made a couple of broadcasts, and what I shown the audience, what I put on the screen, And I want to see if you relate to that, if you resonate with that from what you see. Maybe you don't, but it's something to check. Like I showed you this video, it's something to look at. I showed that the rainbow colors and the coloring of, you know, this happy feeling, especially for children, that they're using these colors and these symbols, etc. Actually, you find them also in the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN. And you find them also with a social impact, which is a new economical model, which most people are still not aware that it's coming. It's like the social credit system, but, you know, make up to look good. And they use the same colors and the same symbols and the same signs as a subliminal mind control or brainwash, especially for children, because obviously this, you know, if you see a colorful ice cream, obviously you like it, you want it. So especially for children who are drawn to this colorful rainbow circus unicorn type thing, and they use the same colors, the same symbols repeatedly by the UN Sustainable Development Goals and by the social impact economical system or social credit that they want to bring about, and the LGBT or transgenderism narrative or agenda. Have you noticed what I just said?
Well, I did notice that somebody not long ago, I guess there was the meeting and the Davos meeting. Yeah. And somebody did provide on Twitter, I think, a close-up of how all these people were wearing the same pin.
Yes, the SDGs pin, yeah. Yes. This is quite old now. It's been 2.5 years since we've seen it. But yes, I'm talking about that as well.
Okay. Well, you know, I would point out, I'm not going to go in the conspiracy theory direction with you. But, sure. You know, I will just point out, as you were speaking, you know, the rainbow, right, the keshet, okay, which we know from the story of Noach and the Teva, and that it is a symbol of hope, and it's a symbol of good things and the future, and it is a symbol of a promise that's made by God mm-hmm. to humanity that he will not punish us in the same way. So I'm not surprised that there are different organizations that, and certainly organizations that want to attract children, that pick the rainbow as a symbol. Of course, there is something else here that I want to mention just before, because I'm going to have to go in a minute.
Sure, please. Yes,
but,
I know.
You know, in addition to the rainbow, you know, the entire, you know, we have all the, like you said, the unicorns and the glitter and the, you know, the gingerbread man. Do you know what that is?
I do. I don't know if the audience does, so please tell
them.
Well,
it's just it's a diagram that's very child friendly in a way that presents grown up ideas about sexuality and gender, and it's all imposed. It's all put on to a gingerbread man, which of course that a gingerbread man is a very, you know, that's like it's a cookie. It's a you know, it stands for childhood innocence. It's for kids. It's for innocent kids. So there's no question, and it's part of the agenda as well, that they must reach the youngest kids possible. That is how to change society. And you know, Hitler said, he said, I don't know if I'm going to not get the quote completely correct.
All right.
But something like, you know, the fact that the parents are not with me, the adults are not with me, you know, I don't care. You don't matter. I have your children.
Yeah.
It's the children that I have, and you're going to be gone and I'll have the children. So, you know, a book like A Need Jazz, which if you look at it is made for very little children, and you introduce these false, dangerous ideas to a child, it's going to make an impression. I was interviewed on YouTube. I can send you the link by Alex Aharon in
Please
Israel,
yes.
In which we discuss A Need Jazz, and we discuss the fact that Sippy, who is a beloved children's entertainer, is going online and encouraging kids and parents to read this book. It's very, very disturbing. You cannot be putting these dangerous ideas into the minds of little children. So I'm just gonna end with saying that, Shai, I'm very, very glad that we got this chance to talk. I'd be happy to come back and talk some more about some of these ideas. I want very much to reach the Israeli public. We only touched on the very, very tip of the iceberg.
I know. I'm aware of that. And if you don't mind even to contact Alex Aharon, and we can do even a conference, like a mutual talk, I think that will be even more beneficial for you and her and obviously the audience. And, you know, couple of small last things. First of all, the rainbow, the actual rainbow of God is one way. And the rainbow that they show for children in this propaganda, it's upside down. This is one thing. Second thing, and obviously there's a reason for that, but we won't go into that now. The second thing, 3 months ago, roughly, I showed an excerpt from Manly Palmer Hall. Manly Palmer Hall, he was a Freemason, and he was allowed to publish Freemason literature and to write about Freemasonry, etc., etc. And what I showed from one of his books, fascinating. I will have a look and I will send it to you because it's really important piece for you, I think, because obviously you know more than what you're saying in this live talk. But what he's saying there is that the Freemasonry, they want to swap everything. They want to turn things upside down. So their goal, one of their goals, is to take a man and to make him into a woman, and to take a woman and make her into a man. And the child of these two, doesn't matter now the technicality, how it's being done, but the child of these two is called the Morning Star. Now, the Morning Star is a nickname for this demigod that they worship, all right? So by having the opposite sex, having the opposite sex change their sexes and having a child, this is like upside down or reverse creation, which goes against God's creation. And if you add just the symbol of this reversed rainbow, again, we're talking about everything is being reversed. Now, I will have a look at this Manly Palmer Hall book. It's only a few minutes, so you can have a look for yourself because it's genuine. And they, you know, even if I take this character, this Baphomet, which is half male, half female, all right? And they worship this kind of androgynous type. And knowing their agenda, I'm saying it, not you, knowing their agenda, and it's not a conspiracy theory, it's actually what they believe in and they publish it. Knowing this agenda and what they put out, this is from even, you know, 80 years ago, 60 years ago, this book. Knowing and seeing what is happening nowadays, one with some sense of logic and common sense cannot but think that, is there a connection between Freemasonry agenda in general and what we are seeing now? But obviously, it's not a question for you, and I will leave you with that. And thank you, Miriam Grossman, for your time. And I really appreciate if you can contact Alex Aaron, and if not, I will do it. It's fine. To have another conversation with both of you. I think it will be beneficial, especially if it happens in the next week or two. I think it can be really good. Thank you for your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Shai. I hope to see you again.
Same here.
Oh, wait, can I give my website?
Yes, please. Can you write it down? There's a private chat on the right. You see a private chat? I just type something quickly. Put the website there. You see it's on the right. There's a private chat box. If you can write your website there and I share it with the audience. I can put it also in the description of the video once it's up.
Okay? I'm doing it right now.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Yeah, I got it. Thank you very much for your time and for your knowledge and your expertise. And I obviously just the tip of the iceberg. To be honest, I'm not sure I want to know what the iceberg is, but
okay. But I'm saying goodbye.
Bye. Thank you very much, Miriam Grossman. Okay. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.